It's the Star Spangled Spectacular, and I thought it was a good time for a history lesson about our national anthem and about Baltimore. And there's really no one better to bring in at this point than Craig Hollander, who's a postdoctoral fellow at Princeton University, and he's also my brother. So he has two things going for him. Craig, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on, Brad.
All right, well, let's get to this. Francis Scott Key, who was he?
Francis Scott Key was a lawyer in his a very prominent lawyer in Georgetown, just outside of D.C., at the time of the war, and he was in his mid-30s, and you know, he was kind of an amateur poet and songwriter in his spare time, but yeah, I mean, he was just a lawyer, and he happened to be at the right place at the right time.
Okay, so this is what I'm confused by. We celebrated a couple of years ago the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Fort McHenry and defeating the British again, and then 2 years later, we're celebrating the writing of our Star-Spangled Banner. So was the anthem written 200 years ago this week, or is it 202 years ago?
Well, this is why, you know, you're a sportscaster and I'm a historian.
Yes.
The battle took place in 1814, not in 1812. And so the battle actually took place 200 years ago right now. The land battle, the Battle of North Point, took place on September 12th, 1814. The Battle of Fort McHenry lasted 25 hours, and it would have started 200 years ago tomorrow. And Francis Scott Key wrote the poem within days of witnessing the attack on Fort McHenry.
So where did he write this? He wrote it in Baltimore, obviously. We know that much. But what are the other details to his work here? And this was just a poem, not a song, right?
Actually, let me back up a little bit. So Francis Scott Key was on board a truce ship. The reason why he was on board a truce ship was because he was busy negotiating the release of a doctor from Maryland who had been taken prisoner by the British for allegedly aiding and abetting some British deserters. And he was summoned by President Madison, to basically go and negotiate the terms for this doctor's release. So he went on board a British vessel, and he overheard, along with his colleagues who were there to negotiate, a lot of the British battle plans. And so the British said, listen, you can't, you know, run back over to Maryland. We can't let you go until after this battle is over. So we're going to basically hold you here. You're not prisoners, but we're going to detain you until it's over. And so he was on board a truce ship during the battle. And there's a lot of evidence. I mean, this is obviously contested, but there's a lot of evidence that he knew this was going to be a song while he was writing it. It looks like a poem, but there's a lot of evidence out there that he wrote it with the tune in mind that it has today, which he would have known very well. And he actually wrote a similar poem to the same tune years earlier. And so, you know, we have every reason to believe that, you know, he wrote it as a song in the first place.
Really? That's amazing. And originally it was much, much, much longer. I looked it up, and it's several paragraphs, not just the one we sing now.
Right. It was very long, and it was printed within a week of the battle. It was printed as a broadsheet and delivered to Fort McHenry, the troops who were still there, who loved it and thought it was a great, you know, poem or song that was written in their honor. And, I mean, I know we use the term going viral today to describe news and, you know, things that happen on Twitter and social media, but that went about as viral as things could go in early American history. I mean, within weeks, it was being reprinted in newspapers across the country. And it was really just what the country needed to lift its spirits after, you know, the burning of Washington, D.C. and the scattering of its government. According to Andrew Jackson, you know, his troops were singing it during the Battle of New Orleans a few months later, and it was inspiring to them.
That's amazing. And when was it adopted officially as our national anthem?
So the Army and the Navy adopted it as a very important song, if not like their national anthem, in the 1890s. And then during World War I, they made that more official. But it wasn't until 1931, under the Hoover administration, that legislation was passed by Congress and was actually signed into law and created as our national anthem today.
Very interesting. And Mike Gibbons from the Babe Ruth Birthplace Museum told me this week that it first played before a sporting event or during a sporting event on record, the 1918 World Series. Babe Ruth was actually on the mound in between innings. That was during the seventh inning. And then later that World Series, they started doing it before games. And the rest for that is history, as they say. Well, and
speaking of how much you can learn from Baltimore area museums, I mean, that's just wonderful. And, you know, speaking of museums, you should really, your listeners should really check out the Flag House, where Mary Pickersgill, you know, actually created the Star-Spangled Banner. It's a wonderful museum. It shows a lot of great material culture from the period, and I've taken classes on field trips there, and they just have a great time checking out, you know, the original relics and seeing how people lived back in those days.
Well, the Ravens over the Steelers, the Orioles over the Yankees, and closing in on their first division title in 16 years, and Baltimore center stage in the country right now for being the place where our national anthem came to be. Pretty cool stuff.
Yes, I am so thankful that that's the reason why we're center stage this weekend and not for other more notorious reasons that we were on stage last weekend.
Well, we'll take that. Craig Hollander, postdoctoral fellow at Princeton University, enlightening us with some Baltimore and American history. Craig, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brett, and have a great time at the celebration this weekend. Right. Wish I was there.
Thank you very much. That's Craig Hollander, my brother, and a historian.